Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Faith Beams GP podcast.
Hello, everyone.
I'm so glad you're joining us today. Whether you're listening from the Caribbean, Africa, Europe, Asia, North America, or South America, we welcome you to this global conversation about faith and life.
It's always great to be here.
It is. And today we're doing a deep dive into something almost everyone experiences at some point in life. Our topic today is when God interrupts your plans.
Right. And it's a heavy one, honestly.
It really is. I mean, I want you, the person listening right now, to take a second and really examine the architecture of your own life. Have you ever planned something carefully, like your career, your family plans, your education, or even just where you wanted to live?
And you had it all mapped out.
Exactly. Yeah. The timeline, the savings account, the five-year plan, only for life to suddenly and sometimes violently change direction.
It's jarring. It's that sudden, non-negotiable removal of control.
Yeah. Maybe a job opportunity didn't work out, or a move happened unexpectedly, or a situation just forced you to rethink everything.
And the immediate reaction to that is almost never Zen acceptance.
No, not at all. It's frustrating. Sometimes those moments feel entirely confusing.
Which is completely natural. We are pattern-seeking creatures. We like our plans.
Right. But many people later discover that those interruptions led them somewhere better than they initially imagined. And that is the exact mission of our deep dive today.
It's a fascinating premise.
It is. We are looking at a really compelling piece of source material. It's titled Divine Disruptions, Finding Purpose When God Interrupts Your Plans.
And what makes this text so rich is how it builds its argument.
Tell us about that structure, because it's pretty unique.
Yeah, so it uses a dual approach to prove its point. First, it anchors itself in the ancient world. It pulls these highly recognized archetypal narratives of disruption from biblical texts.
Moses and Paul.
Exactly. But it doesn't just leave the concept in antiquity. It transitions into this extensive series of modern-day case studies across six different continents.
Proving that this isn't just an old story. It's a universal human experience.
Right. It's looking at what happens to the human psyche and to communities when our carefully constructed safety nets just fail.
And just to set a parameter for our listeners, we're looking at this text neutrally. It obviously uses a specific theological framework mentioning God and divine intent. But whether you share that faith background or not, the psychological coping mechanisms here are universally applicable.
Oh, absolutely. It's a study in human resilience.
So let's jump right into section one, the ancient archetypes.
Yeah.
And they start with Moses.
Arguably one of the most famous derailed life plans in history.
Right. I mean, Moses grew up in Egypt, in the royal court. He had a completely different life plan mapped out for him.
A life of extreme privilege, highly structured societal expectations.
He was entrenched in that system. But then one unexpected moment changed everything.
The burning bush.
Yes. The text highlights this encounter. And it wasn't just a gentle, a gentle nudge.
No, it was a sudden life-altering anomaly. It demanded an entirely new trajectory.
He didn't plan to become a leader who would help guide people to freedom. That wasn't on his vision board.
Definitely not.
But the text uses Exodus 3:10 as the foundational evidence here. It quotes, "So now, go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people out of Egypt."
Which is a complete override of his autonomy.
It really is. And this is where the authors introduce this profound core lesson. They state that interruptions can sometimes be invitations to purpose.
And we really need to unpack the difference between an interruption and an invitation, because they are not the same thing.
Right. Break that down for us.
Well, an interruption implies an obstacle on your current path. Like, you're sitting in traffic, but your destination remains the same.
You just delayed.
Exactly. But an invitation implies that the original destination has been scrapped entirely. A new path has opened up. And crucially, an invitation requires your active consent to accept it.
But I want to push back on that a bit, or at least play devil's advocate. If someone loses their job, calling that an invitation might feel a bit dismissive of the pain, right?
That is a critical tension. The text isn't demanding toxic positivity. Mm-hmm. It's not saying the disruption doesn't hurt. It's arguing that the meaning generated in the aftermath is the purpose. The invitation isn't to enjoy the loss of your job. The invitation is to step into the necessary growth that the loss forces upon you.
Ah, I see. It's the difference between meaningless suffering and generative suffering.
Exactly. Sometimes God's interruptions lead to greater purpose, even if the middle part is deeply uncomfortable.
That makes a lot of sense. And they double down on this with the second biblical figure, Paul.
Paul is fascinating.
Because he wasn't passive. Much like Moses, Paul originally had a completely different direction for his life, but Paul was sprinting in his direction.
He was zealous. He had a highly specific, aggressive mission to persecute the early Christian movement.
And then comes the dramatic encounter on the road to Damascus,
which was a total cognitive collapse. When you build your entire identity around a specific worldview and it gets dismantled overnight, that's ontological shock.
The text shares Acts 9.15 here, which says, "This man is my chosen instrument to proclaim my name."
And they zero in on this phrase. What seemed like an interruption became a transformation.
Transformation. Not just a pause.
Right. An interruption pauses what you are doing. A transformation changes who you are.
That is such an important distinction. The disruption burns away an obsolete version of yourself so a new one can emerge.
It was a terrifying process.
Truly. But what I love about this source material is that it doesn't just leave us in antiquity. It executes this massive pivot.
It leaves the ancient texts and transitions into modern, real-world geography.
Yes, it sets out to prove that this framework is scalable. It's a universal human experience. So let's talk about these real-life global case studies.
Starting in the Caribbean.
Right. The text details the situation in many Caribbean islands, where people face these powerful, destructive storms.
Hurricanes that severely disrupt daily life.
Exactly. Homes are damaged, the power grid fails, and all your plans are forcefully paused. It is the ultimate physical disruption.
But the authors analyze the aftermath, and instead of focusing solely on the despair, they look at the behavioral response.
Neighbors helping neighbors.
Yes. In highly stable environments, we tend to isolate ourselves. We get siloed. But when the physical environment is destroyed, those silos collapse.
Communities rebuild together. Churches open their doors for support.
The interruption yields this profound collective strength that just wouldn't exist in a comfortable, frictionless environment.
And the text asks a reflection question here, which I want to pose directly to you listening. How have unexpected events brought people together in your community?
It's a great question to think about.
Think about a localized crisis, a flood, or a massive snowstorm. Did you suddenly share resources with a neighbor you usually just wave at?
Our most meaningful connections are often forged in shared inconvenience.
That is so true. And it transitions beautifully into the next case study, which focuses on the continent of Africa,
where the disruption is less about weather and more about economics.
Right. Across many African countries, the text notes the heavy reliance on strong family and community networks.
Kinship-based safety nets.
Yes. And sometimes unexpected changes, like sudden economic shifts or forced relocations, require families to radically adjust their plans.
The original plan for stability just evaporates.
But the text takes this really optimistic pivot.
Mm-hmm.
It points out that these forced adjustments lead directly to new opportunities.
Necessity entrepreneurship.
Exactly. Entrepreneurship and innovation born out of absolute necessity, supported by the community coming together.
And this is where the text brings in Romans 8.28.
And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him.
They apply this ancient promise to modern economic resilience. The good isn't necessarily getting the old stable job back. The good is the newfound adaptability and the community trust.
Redefining what working out for the best actually means.
Exactly.
Which brings us to South America.
A region noted in the text for vibrant, expressive faith.
Yes. The text highlights how these communities gather. When challenges arise, political instability, economic hardship, the response is highly active.
Gathering in prayer, worship, and mutual support.
It's a loud assertion of hope. The core takeaway the authors present here is that faith acts as the glue. It brings hope and unity during chaotic interruptions.
It's a shared ritual. When your personal plans are chaotic, the predictable rhythm of communal faith provides an anchor.
So we've looked at the collective response, the power of community in the Caribbean, Africa, and South America. But now the text zooms in.
It shifts from sociology back to psychology.
Yes. From collective resilience to individual planning and internal reframing. And it starts this section by looking at Asia.
Which is a fascinating cultural contrast.
It really is. The text points out the high value placed on planning and discipline in many Asian cultures. Students and professionals carefully map out their futures.
The margin for error is perceived to be zero. You have to score perfectly on the exams, get into the right university, land the specific corporate job.
The blueprint is rigid. But what happens when that rigid plan faces an unexpected event?
When you fail the exam or the industry shifts.
According to the source, these interruptions lead people to discover passions they didn't expect.
It forces a cognitive pivot.
Yeah, talk about that. How does a broken plan force creative thinking?
Well, if you are executing a perfect routine, your brain is on autopilot. It's efficient, but it's not creative. When an insurmountable obstacle blocks that path, your brain is forced to engage in lateral thinking.
You have to forge new neural pathways.
Exactly. The disruption of discipline fosters new creativity and growth. You awaken from the optimized autopilot.
Optimized autopilot. I love that phrasing. If you never hit a roadblock, you never have to ask yourself if you actually like the road you're on.
Right. You're just executing the next step.
Wow. Okay, let's move to Europe. The text brings up geographic relocation here.
Right. People experiencing career changes or opportunities that force them to start fresh in new cities.
Uprooting your entire life. And the authors do a great job here of validating the negative emotions. They acknowledge that at first, these changes feel uncertain.
It's a culture of stress. Losing all your familiar cultural touchstones is anxiety-inducing.
But the disruption eventually leads to the discovery of new friendships, new cultures, expanding perspectives that would have remained entirely unknown otherwise.
When you stay in one place, your worldview tends to calcify.
It hardens.
Yeah. The forced relocation shatters that. It demands an expansion of empathy.
And the text asks another reflection question here. Have you ever moved somewhere new and discovered unexpected opportunities?
It forces the listener into retrospective sense-making.
Think about your favorite relationships or skills. How many of them exist solely because a previous plan completely failed?
Probably most of them.
Probably. Which leads us perfectly into the North American case study.
The modern professional landscape.
Right. Across North America, the text focuses on individuals facing sudden career shifts, job changes, layoffs, or a business evolving unexpectedly.
In a culture where career is often tied to identity, an involuntary pivot is a severe blow.
But the text unpacks a psychological benefit. These sudden moments push people to develop entirely new skills.
It forces adaptation.
You discover strengths you didn't even realize you had simply because the interruption demanded it.
You don't know how much weight you can carry until it's dropped on you.
Exactly. You wouldn't have learned that new software or started that consulting firm if the comfortable job hadn't vanished.
Sustained comfort is the enemy of expanded capacity.
That is profound. Sustained comfort is the enemy of expanded capacity. So let's synthesize all of this.
It's a massive scope.
It really is. The source weaves all these diverse global experiences together so well. Whether it's a storm in the Caribbean, a career shift in Asia, or a relocation in Europe, the universal thread is identical.
The human mechanism for making meaning is consistent.
Yes. And the text offers this profound summary. Many meaningful journeys begin with unexpected changes.
It completely reevaluates the vocabulary we use.
It does. Let's look at the specific setbacks they mention. A delay, a closed door, a change in direction.
Society views a delay as a waste of time, but the text frames it as necessary preparation.
And a closed door is seen as a rejection.
But it's actually a protective boundary, keeping you off the wrong path.
And a change in direction isn't getting lost. It's finally finding the right coordinates.
It's a total paradigm shift.
But we have to talk about the confusing middle. Because the text is deeply empathetic here. It acknowledges that these moments may feel confusing in the moment.
They don't expect you to have enlightened perspective the second you get laid off.
Right, you're in the liminal space. The old reality is gone. The new one hasn't formed.
You have to suspend judgment. You can't evaluate the destination while you're still disoriented in the detour.
That is so key. And to prove this, the text does this amazing interactive thing. It asks the audience what country they are from.
And encourages them to share their stories of unexpected life changes.
To encourage others, so I want to apply this directly to you listening. Take a mental inventory. Think about your own closed doors, the ones that devastated you at the time.
The job you didn't get, the relationship that ended.
Did that painful rejection actually save you? Did it lead to the life you have now?
Almost always. The answer is yes.
It is. So as we wrap up this deep dive, let's look at the final summary from the source. It's a monumental shift in perspective.
The interruptions in our lives are absolutely not setbacks.
No. They are the beginnings of something greater. They are guiding us toward purpose, growth, and new opportunities.
The text actually closes with a prayer, but when you look at the core wisdom of it, it emphasizes the universal need for patience during uncertainty.
Trusting the path when the future is completely obscured.
And the vital necessity of supporting one another across cultures and continents.
Beautifully said. We want to leave you with one final provocative thought, something to really mull over.
Think about the biggest, most frustrating closed door or delayed plan you are facing right this very second.
The obstacle generating the most anxiety in your life today. If you apply the blueprint we just unpacked, from Moses to modern-day entrepreneurs, what if that locked door isn't a failure of your plan at all?
What if it's the exact required redirection?
What if it's keeping you perfectly on schedule for a transformation you simply can't see yet?
It challenges us to look at the locked door not as an ending, but as an invitation.
Something to seriously consider the next time life rips the steering wheel out of your hands. Thank you for taking this deep dive with us today. Until next time.